Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to In the Open. Today, we have a guest, Whitney, who's been on our podcast a couple times, so she needs no introduction. Today, we're going to talk about how one can be a better ally.
So, yeah, how do we become better allies? Not only in the aspect of like our mental health and sharing our mental health journey with someone. And when someone shares their mental health journey with us and how we can be supportive and responsive. But also when we think about the current environment in which we're in, when we're really, you know, experiencing racial trauma, I feel like everywhere I read, it's like the racial reckoning. And it's like, what? This has been happening for years. People are just paying attention now. So I don't necessarily like that framework, but we'll go with that. So I would love to start with a question, because for me, where I kind of start thinking about it is, have I been a good ally when somebody's approached me? And sometimes I don't think that I've been the best. So I can talk a little bit about that, but I'd love to hear from you guys too. So what does it mean to be an ally? Whitney, how do you describe that? What does an ally mean?
I think in my like personal definition, I'm not quoting Webster on this, guys, but I would say that it means that you as an individual stand with a community that you might not necessarily identify with directly, but you support and carry their troubles and burdens and want to give back to them as you can with who you are, despite the fact that you might not have an exact identity with that group.
So the interesting thing I think about ally, bouncing off what Whitney said, is that it shows that when you say that you're not necessarily part of that group, but you're a friend to that group, like this is how you're a friend. Is that the words you use? Not necessarily, but right? Like you stand with this group. Where when it comes to race or even mental health, like where, and maybe even for LGBTQ, what really I struggle with when I think about an allyship now is that I really think about the interconnectedness of the way that we see the world and we have identities. And saying that I'm an ally now, today, in my reflection, makes me wonder if in some ways it also means you're kind of set apart versus really seeing the intersectional dynamic here, like my interpersonal relationships, right? Like, maybe this is just too philosophical. Like it just, it's like, am I part of a separate group that is supporting you? Or do I really have to wrestle with how, when we struggle with these things, like when we struggle with disability rights, when we struggle with labels and we struggle with our identities, like there is no other. If I think about it, just like how I'm supposed to be a good friend, that almost gives me a pass for not being like, wait, how am I actively contributing to systems that make it unfair for people? How, what is my role is not just to support. Like I have to see the way that this affects me too. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think you can see the term support in a more active way. Like I totally get what you're saying. Like does the word ally give us an out? Like do we get to kind of be like, I'm an ally. I don't share in that pain. Like peace out. See you when the next person dies and there's a march, right? But I think to be a real ally, I think we can use that term without othering because it still gives validity to the people that are living that experience. I don't want to say I'm part of the Black community because I don't walk the street every day. Like today I crossed the street, not in a crosswalk. And I was like, if I was a Black person and there was a police behind me, like I could have gotten arrested or stopped or harassed. And literally a cop pulls up behind me and waves. Like he's like, hey. So I feel like as an ally, I can't say like I'm part of the Black community because I am taking away from your story. But the allyship piece lets me say I'm doing the work and I'm actively supporting you. I think we have to be very careful with the word support. Like, are we just using it as like, hey,
cover.
Yeah, yeah. Or like it makes me feel good, you know? So I think it's just really re-emphasizing all the time that the word allyship is not just a pretty word to use so you can ignore your white privilege or ignore the fact that you don't face a mental illness or you're not dealing with a physical disability. It's like, no, I actually am fighting for your dignity and respect and justice for your kind.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I was just having a reaction to how much I feel like there's performative support.
I'm wrestling with this idea of how this word right now, is really being thrown around. What it actually looks like is very different. And I think it gets to what you were saying, Whitney, like the actions that you're taking to ensure that you are living your truth as an ally instead of simply slapping that label on and being like, oh, look, me too. It's like, no, please do not go down that pathway where you're just like, okay, I've got this label now in my backpack. And anytime anybody's going to be doing experiencing some sort of injustice, then I'm going to be like, wait, I'm an ally. Nah, dude, you should supposed to be an ally when I'm in my good times and my bad times. That's an ally. They're walking next to you to make sure that you're being respected and your experience is dignified, right? I think that's the struggle.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I don't know, at least for us, I feel like we've heard some white people say that when it comes to race equity, that the phrase that is used, even among those close to us, is like, well, I don't know what my place is. This is from white people saying, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I don't know where my place is. What's your sense of where that comes from, Whitney?
Yeah, I think.
By the way, y'all, Whitney's white. Like,
oh, yeah. If you can't tell from my Valley Girl accent, I'm white. So I'm talking from a space of trying to learn to be a better ally during this time. And I think that whole idea of like, I don't know my place in this comes from one, and I've talked to America a lot about this. I think it comes from a place of wanting to avoid tough conversations and avoid some of what it really takes to be an ally, because that isn't pretty. Like, that work is not slapping a button on your backpack and going about your life. Like, being an ally is hard work. So I think the whole like, I don't know where my place is, so I'm just doing like the best I can, comes from not wanting to get really down and dirty with what it takes to be a good ally. And I also think that comes from, that's kind of like our cop out for wanting to not hurt BIPOC voices. But in all reality, is it turns around and does the exact opposite. Like, it does hurt them because we're the people in power with our white skin. And so if we're just constantly saying, I just don't want to raise my voice because I don't know where my place is as an ally. Like, okay, well, then you're not being an ally because your voice is using your place of power to speak up.
Yeah, let's keep going. Let's dive into this because I think people don't struggle with it.
You said something and what resonates is choice. You have a choice, yeah. Right? Where you can say, well, I don't really know. I am, I'm not really sure. I don't know if I want to really open that door, you know? And the counter to that is like, I don't have a choice. This is in my face every single day. So for you to ask, I'm saying you as in white people, not you, Whitney, right? But for or anybody, really, for you to ask yourself the question, do I have a choice in how it is that I'm going to live my life and live as an ally and be a true ally? Then if you're really going to do the work, do the work. Take some time to consider what your place is within all of this and figure out and be like, dude, I never thought about it. It's okay to start from that place. Most people have never thought about race, and that's just the reality.
So you said it seems that the first place to start, because we're talking about how to be a good ally, is with fear. because it is painful what we do. And if I have to ask myself an accounting of times where I found that it was challenging to lean in, for example, is like, and it's still a challenge, like with my trans friends. And I don't know if you guys experience this, but learning to break out of my heteronormative privilege around gender. And I remember, you're going to struggle if you don't have Black friends, if you don't have LGBTQ friends, then you're not working, because then you're not faced with situations where you struggle with things. But, you know, when people look non-binary, right, or agender, some of the things that I fell over was how to say he, she, them,
the use of blah, pronouns. Blah,
blah, right? Yeah, and pronouns. And then it's really interesting because then, you know, people talk about microaggressions and the way that you're like, the way that asking that is awkward and painful for our trans community members. And then as someone who's like trying to unprogram myself from my hetero cisgender normative community, like it's going to be painful. So like as a good ally, though, I had an opportunity to just run away. And this is interesting. So I could either run away by just not having trans friends, which is not cool. Or I did this thing where I would be like, you know what? I can't figure out the gender thing and I'm too scared to figure out how to do it well. So I just started calling people by their name. But that's freaking anti-LGBTQ. Like,
a little bit
that's
of a
running away, man. Yeah. I totally ran away. Like, I have to reflect on how I was not cool. Like, it didn't force me at all to really, like, figure out and have a conversation with my LGBTQ friends to say, how do I do this? Like, obviously, I'm failing here, but I want to figure out how to, what's the right way? Like, you, like, right? Like, do you have that conversation? Or
so many good things you said there, Teresa, because the first thing that I was, like, immediately latching onto is this idea of your ability to run away, right? Like, it's freaking scary. I don't know what to do. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. You dip, right? You're mm-hmm. out. But then the other choice is to really engage with yourself, right? And be like, why is this so difficult for me? Mm-hmm. Right? And then
why am I scared?
Yeah. Why am I scared? Why is this so hard for me? And then taking the next step with respect, right? To say to your friends, I'm really struggling with this. I need your help to help me think through this, help me think about this. But that does not give you a free pass to go to any of your friends and be like, America, can you tell me what it's like to be a Latinx person in the United States?
Yeah, because that's the slippery slope. Everything is so like, I get it. Like everything feels so scary because that happens for people too. White people are like, oh, well, I don't really get this. So they go to some friend, you know, and they're like, can you tell me why Black people
yes.
feel racism? And then Black people or any person of color, Asian people, myself Asian, you just look at people like, I am not going to do this again. Right. I can't.
Y'all touched on so many important points, because this fear, this like instinct to run, I think is so common. And I've seen it happen these past few weeks, even among quote unquote, I'm going to embarrass myself from saying this, but woke people, because there's this idea that if I am an ally and I'm supposed to be doing good things, then I have to be perfect in it and I cannot mess up. There's this piece of perfection that I would say is like embedded in the white culture a little bit, that you, if you're going to do anything, do it perfect or just don't do it. And so the cop out of like, this is too hard, or I just don't want to mess up, it comes from that like fear of messing up. But then I want to just like remind anyone who's listening and wants to be a better ally that by doing that, you're not, you're making it worse. You're like not being a better ally. So just by like showing up and saying, I'm not great at this, but I want to be better, I think is a way to approach that and do the work internally first of what, you know, what you were saying, America, like how is my life impacting how I'm viewing this situation? And just remembering, like, don't run, because you don't have to be perfect. This is something like that's embedded in our systems and in our country and in every interaction we work with. So it takes a while to unpack it. And I guess the most important thing is you're going to get it wrong. You're not going to be right every time in how you like deal with being an ally, but it's how you go from that point and educate yourself and move forward that I feel like is the important piece.
And it's, I know we've talked before about trauma in racism and like trauma in labels, right? And for people who identify as living with a mental illness or are LGBTQ or people of color, we are traumatized by our experiences. So we're not always the best people. I think that's what that reaction is from POC, where we're like, I'm not going to do this again. I've said I'm not going to do this again in many experiences of my life. When I have to re-explain my actual childhood trauma, when I have to explain microaggressions, when I have to explain microfeminist, anti-feminist, misogynist aggression, you know, all of the little things. And that does make it hard. So where does, if I want to be a good ally and I have to do the actual work and I cannot burden my friends with my rudimentary comments, then what does that work look like? If I'm digging into my fear, I'm not being afraid, then what's the next step?
I would say what's happened on social media within the last few weeks is that all of a sudden, like literally snap of fingers, right? You have a bunch of people, and not just white people, because this is not just a white or black thing, not at all. It's people that have never really thought about the impact of race, looking for answers. So a lot of people of color, black, indigenous men and women who have been doing this work for a very long time, all of a sudden are getting like 100,000 followers overnight, you know? Why? Because they like dropped this like nugget of information and somebody's like, whoa, I've never heard that. And it's like, yeah, dude, you haven't been reading the right things. You know, step away from like the magazines at the grocery store. Find some knowledge around all of these issues. And that's not to say that, you know, you read a book and all of a sudden you're like, okay, now I've checked the box. I've read the books. Look, I'm looking at all these movies. I've watched I Am Not Your Negro. You know, and you're like, that's not it. You can do all of these things, but you have to actually take what you're learning and seeing and integrate that into the actions, right, that you take on a daily basis.
And that's what I mean. How does a person move beyond books?
Yeah.
Because books can be performative. Relinking something can be performative. Switching it to offset your thing can be performative. So we say lean in and be an ally means you don't get to just run away. Like, you can't just go read a book.
So I think one of the, and I'm glad you asked this, Teresa, because I think we preach this to white people that it can be just performative and you need to go further. But I think so many of them don't actually know what that looks like and don't, you know, they read the book and they're like, okay, I'm awakened to the issues of BIPOC communities and I've done my work, and they don't understand what it means to move forward. I am doing it. So I think it is important to lay out what that can look like in your day-to-day life. And I just want to say one thing, because America is so right. So many people are turning to their social media feeds and their BIPOC friends to ask questions. If it can be Googled, just Google it. And like, if you want to know what BIPOC means, don't go ask your BIPOC friend. You know, I think that's one of the first steps. And being an ally is taking the initiative to seek out answers on your own. Once you've sought out those answers through books, through articles, movies, through podcasts, through our podcast, through Facebook Lives, whatever that looks like, as you're on your educational journey, you need to start applying the lessons learned in those books to your day-to-day life and how that lens can be seen through your eyes and in your day-to-day interactions. So I think that it's on the micro level, it's okay. If I read about policing in Black communities, then I do need to walk around my neighborhood and take a look at how many police are sitting in their cars watching the parks. You know, how many times do I think that when I'm in trouble, I'm just going to call a cop, and how that Black communities or communities of color can't necessarily use that privilege because they fear for their lives. I think it's starting with that is like, okay, I've done the work. now I need to take everything I've learned and start applying it to all the situations in my own life. And reminding yourself to do that on an ongoing basis, because it's so easy to read that book and do that and then be done. But this is like a lifelong education process.
The hard part, I think, for many people is recognizing where your privilege exists. That's a first step, right? How does race impact your life? And Whitney and I have had this conversation where she'd never really thought about race. And she was like, oh my God, I am totally not thinking about it. And then it was like, wait, I'm white. It impacts everything, you know? And like the overwhelming aspect of understanding what that means for your life is something that can come as a shock to people, which I welcome that opportunity. It's an opportunity that exists for many people to be like, think about how easy it was for you to, and I don't, this is not for everybody, right? Not everything's easy, but were your chances to getting into your workplace different because you may identify as, you know, as cisgender? Were there differences in how you've been spoken to in different environments because of how you may identify, what you look like, your accent? All of these things are part of the systems that ultimately oppress Black, Indigenous, and people of color, right? And when you flip it and you start asking those questions, I think that's when you do that hard work on a day-to-day, be like, wait, like Whitney, you're saying, how easy it is for me to go and access and walk in a park and not be questioned or have any fear related to my experience in walking the dog for 30 minutes.
I agree with you that starting with checking your privilege is a really good place for an ally to start. But because I think of racism and the challenges with people with mental health problems, right? And like the ways that we feel, the parallel there is like when I hear like check your privilege, that has become, that's carried on a connotation mm-hmm. for people that doesn't let white people relate to it as easily. There's so, I don't know what it is about that, like that it's been flipped on its head and now made this weird thing that people can't accept that they need to see their privilege. You know what it happened is it gets tied up into white people's pain, where they're like, I've had problems, I have pain, I live in poverty, and so I don't have privilege. So they're dealing with their own pain, so they can't see the pain that Black people have, and the way that they have benefited from that privilege, that they have benefited from those systems, or from a trauma perspective, at worst, contributed to it, right? And that's where like the privilege piece is, like when you think about it from a trauma perspective, is about what's hard. And the reason why I think people want to run away from it is because when you really wrestle with it as an ally, you experience the pain of knowing that you have actively contributed. And in some ways, I think about like mental health. Like if I think about my mental health and I think, what is it that I want my family to say or do to help me understand that they know what it feels like to struggle, mm-hmm. right? Because there are parallels, right? To
yeah, completely.
Mental health and racism and feminism and anti-LGBTQ, like, let's talk about that for a second. So like if we're not just talking about identifying your privilege from like a just calling it that, like if I had to ask myself, like, what does it look like to see my role? Like, does saying, what do I want from my family members when it comes to their acknowledgement of my pain? Like, what is it that I want from them?
You know, you're right about this whole movement around this word of checking your privilege. I've always seen the world and really ask people to look at the way in which our worldviews differ, okay? And the way I have helped people understand why this makes a difference is like, if you and I are sitting and looking at an object, right? And you are wearing glasses that are tinted pink, you're going to see the world as tinted pink. But if you're not wearing these glasses, you're going to see the world as it is. And oftentimes, because we're not able to just take off our glasses and be like, oh, why don't you put these on and see what the world looks like through my eyes? That's a really hard step for people to understand. So when you talk about like what you would want from your family, you know, it's very hard to try to empathize with something that doesn't come naturally to you. You've not experienced it. You don't know the right questions to ask. So many times people say things that are hurtful because they just don't know any better.
But that's part of the hurt, right?
Yes.
That's the problem. Completely. That's part of the hurt. Them not knowing what to say and then saying things that are actually hurtful is part of the hurt. That's why people of color say, I don't want to do this again because doing that puts me at risk. But that's not hard. Everybody has experienced pain. Everybody has experienced what it feels like to be traumatized by someone because, look, we're all human beings and we suck and we all hurt one another. Let's be honest. Nobody has lived a life where they've not experienced interpersonal relationship pain.
Okay.
And like, I don't know. I just think like, what's the one thing? I don't want people to give me excuses. I don't want them to like, they say things that are hurtful. But if I have to like think about what do I want from my family, honestly, the first thing I want is I want them to say sorry. It's funny. There are people I'm ready to hear sorry from.
Right.
And there are some people I don't want to hear sorry from. Like the person who has directly hurt me, I don't want to hear sorry from that person because I just don't think that they're serious or sincere. And I also will not accept the idea of getting a sorry from someone who is not sincere. But from people who I think have hurt me and who actually care about me when they hurt me, I want a sorry. And I want to see them hurt because to me that indicates that they get it. They're finally relating to what my pain is in a way that they see what I'm experiencing. Like, and I don't know if there are parallels there to being a good ally in other areas.
I think there are. I think this is like an interesting piece to it all because, one, I'm going way back, Teresa, but I think you're right in that we don't want to admit we're sorry or even acknowledge it. And we've kind of been trained to do that, I think, because of that fear that we're part of the problem. And I'm saying maybe this is better contributed to the issues of race and white people. But like I feel like we've created these defense mechanisms. Like I have struggle in my life, so I don't need to really like focus on privilege because I'm poor and struggling too. You know, we've created these defense mechanisms so that we have a cop out for being part of the problem. So I think it's really interesting when thinking about being an ally to race, to the LGBTQ community, to look at something like mental health that knows, you know, no boundaries oftentimes when it comes to demographics. I've been on the podcast before talking about my anxiety. And so if I think about, how would I want my family to react when I'm in the middle of some pain from my anxiety and using that to help guide my allyship in other groups, I want them to just acknowledge that my pain is real, that it is relevant and it is valid, and that they might have experienced stress in their day-to-day life. You know, everyone experiences stress, but that this is more than stress, that this is bigger, and they know that. And I think we can take that same lens when I'm thinking about race issues. It's like if I'm talking to someone and they're explaining their traumas, or I'm reading an article, you know, I might not even be interacting with the person and I'm reading about their traumas. Instead of getting my defense mechanism of like, well, I've experienced trauma, my parents are divorced, like, let me talk about that. I lean into the, no, your trauma is real, and I don't have to get into this trauma tug of war to validate my pain that I might have played a role in. I think we can take it from how would I want to be treated? You know, it's like the golden rule. How would I want to be treated in this situation? I would want to be validated and know that I understand that while I can't walk a mile in your shoes, I can just know that that mile was not easy for you. So I think there's a piece in using that question of like, everyone's faced their own trauma. So how would you want someone to respond if you were in that place? I would want someone to respond and validate my experiences. And I think that that's a piece of allyship that can go a long way, especially if you're starting your journey towards trying to be a better ally. It's getting out of that trap of needing to be in a tug of war to justify our own life experiences and maybe even the role we've played, and understanding that you're moving forward. So you played a role. There's no doubt about it. But validating that person's experience and moving forward is really powerful.
So like, I think this was really interesting because in our office, we're going through meetings where we talk just interpersonally with one another about our understandings of race equity and the intersection of racism and mental health disability equality. And one thing I was really struggling with over the last couple of weeks is, like, you know, for the POC people in our office, like, we cannot help but cry. And there's so much pain in the things that we've experienced. Our desire to deal with these issues is to run away from that pain, right? So, like, I just reflect on, like, these meetings that we have, and, like, and then I leave these meetings feeling horrible shame because I'm like, here I go again, this damn stupid Asian woman, hysterical crying, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, why aren't any of the white people, like, crying or, like,
getting upset? Yeah.
Understanding how hard it is, or getting upset. And you're like, this is why nobody wants to talk about problems, because at every moment in this experience, you freaking get hurt again and again and again. But, like, you, if you don't, you just bury it. And, like, you can't. We can't keep burying it, man. Nobody wants to live in the world we live in. Like, it's actually a horrible, we've created a horrible world for our future.
Absolutely. And I think something that is important, Teresa, to that point is, when you're being an ally, you should be, like, taking this learning process in a place that you have trust and respect already. So, like, I wouldn't go engage in trying to be a better ally with a stranger on the internet, because I'm hearing you talk, and I've been in those conversations with you, you know, in the office. And what I feel like, and I can't speak for all white people, although God, sometimes I wish I could. But what I feel like is happening in those situations is, we have built a level of trust and respect to some point at our office. And so white people, in my experience, tend to shy away from showing emotion or reacting, because they fear hurting BIPOC people more. And this is a controversial, like, idea, I think, but there's this, if I respect and trust you, I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I'm just going to stay silent. I can see you're really upset. I don't want to upset you more. So then you just perpetuate the issue. It's like this terrible cycle where, like, I want to respect and trust you, so I'm not going to hurt you anymore. So I'm just not going to engage in the conversation, and then we're screwed. So there has to be, like, a point where white people are like, I know I built a level of trust and respect. I think that's why America and I get in so many, like, discussions on race, because I know I can, like, speak my mind without her knowing it's a personal attack on her as a person. So I think it's like, how do you,
or a personal failing on your part,
or on my part, right? I know she's not gonna judge me and say, God, you are a terrible white person. She's gonna say, okay, let's, like, lift that conversation up and talk through that. So I think it's important, when you're thinking about being an ally, if you're, you have to find people that you can have conversation with and engage in this dialogue where you're not constantly thinking that fear of judgment, because it's real. We're human. We have to find spaces where we can just process verbally. Maybe that's part of the piece too, because we do shy away from these conversations so much.
I totally agree with that. You know, you would want somebody to validate your experience and maybe apologize. But I'm at a different place. Like, I don't want your apology. I don't care for your apology. I want you to, this is very, a little crass, I want you to shut the hell up and go do the work.
So
that's what I want.
That's interesting. Shut the hell up and go do the work. Because I think of, when I'm listening to me and I'm listening to Whitney and now I'm listening to you, what I hear in my mental health mind, my mental health lens obsessed, is that, like, I'm like, oh, what stage of grief are we all in?
That's a really good comparison, though.
I'm teetering somewhere in, like, denial and depression, and America sounds like she's,
I'm in anger. Yeah. You're right, though, Teresa. That's, you're head on with that. Because, you know, something happened today, for example, where I was having a conversation with some of our partners, and I'm using more pronouns than I have before, right? And what you were talking about earlier about, like, making sure that you use the correct pronoun. And it's such a normal part of function to just be like he, she. And if somebody has told you that they identify as they, and modifying your speech pattern to reflect that, you really have to make your brain stop and be like, I'm sorry, they, and continue to correct yourself, right? It's to make it instinctual. And that's part of the process that has to happen, I think, when you're becoming an ally, when you're really doing the work. That's what I mean, doing the work. Stopping in your tracks and be like, oh, wait, you're going to the grocery store. How easy it is for you to go to the grocery store? You need butter? You need to go walk through, like, you know, 10 blocks to get butter and not be worried about somebody shooting at you? Or, you know, these are things that I think you have to think about and process.
And your desire to have validation comes from a lens of anger. Like, you've never wrestled with what it feels like to be in my shoes, and I need you to do that. You know,
yeah.
Don't talk to me until you have.
Yeah. You know what comes to mind, and what has come to mind around all these issues? And this is a very stereotypical statement and a microaggression. So I'm warning you that that's what it is. For every single kind of profession that exists right now, who has led any type of research around these things? White people. Okay. White people. That's it. It's an important thing to note there. White people have led those efforts. So what happens in those spaces? Some white person decides, oh, there's a problem. Oh my God, let's investigate it. Let's do this research. And all of a sudden there's this body of research that's created by all these people. Why isn't that same lens being applied to this? Because it hurts to look at how you are part of the problem, and then it actually takes effort to make a change. So that's why I'm like, white people, go do your work, go do your homework, go study, go read up, go talk to people, and then come back to me when you're ready to have a real in-depth conversation.
I think that's a really powerful way to like frame it, America. If you think about who's making all the power and decisions and how issues have gotten solved over the years. And I would encourage to be an ally to dig deeper than the stereotypical answers people come up with when they think about privilege. Because I was asked to think about my privilege and asked if I had a teacher that looked like me ever. Yeah, every single one. And to think about students of color who, you know, so go dig deeper. But my point was, how do we then hold space for people at all their different stages in this journey of being an ally and respecting people at their different stages in the BIPOC community? Because I think a lot of people in the BIPOC community, from the work I've been doing over the past few months, they're in that anger stage. So how do we hold space for that? And how do we hold space for the white person that's just now realizing that privilege exists, so that we don't alienate them from this process and help them become an ally? Because I fear that sometimes when we're all at these different, like, if we look, think of it as like a building and we're all at these different levels and it's like the elevator stopped working, so we're just going to stay down at our level because your level is too high up and I'm scared of heights. That's just not for me. That's what I'm worried about. Like white people at the bottom, like they're just going to be like too hard. And the problem is that they're the ones making the power and decision. So how do we hold space for them to do their own growth and journey while respecting the anger and the pain and the hurt? I that's where I always feel like I end up as an ally.
I say finding community with other people that are interested in doing the work, because I really like your metaphor of the building. I really get that. But you know what I think about is like open a window, yo. Like open a window, look down and be like, what are you doing down there? Tell me so I can learn.
Look up and see.
Yeah, and be
there's
like,
people
hey.
At the top that need your help.
Yeah. So it, you know, Teresa kind of talked about this earlier, and this idea of like ownership. It's okay for you to feel strange and weirded out by this process. That means you're actually doing the work. In the same way that we ask people to think about mental health and mental illness, right? If I am diagnosed with bipolar disorder and my family member has no clue about it, one of the things that Teresa and I've talked about is like, you got to give them something to learn about this. But that's one step. That's it. That's all I'm doing. I'm going to give you this step. It's not for me to go and teach you about this. Now, it also doesn't mean that I'm asking you to solve all my problems. That's not what we're asking. In this space, we're saying, validate my experience. maybe apologize for the fact that you never have really been supportive of me in the past, but now I'm ready. I'm ready for you to be like, how can I help you? And that's the question I think the ally has to ask himself. How can I be of help to this community? So when you think about like our workplaces, how are you involved in the policies that impact your day-to-day actions? Are there ways that you can change? Are you and your family in an enclave of white people that you've never actually had a black friend? And I mean a real black friend or a real Latinx friend or a real LGBT individual who identifies as LGBTQIA, right? I mean, like, these are real relationships that we're asking you to form. And it and relationships are not just like, okay, I've identified you, now I'm going to latch onto you and that's it. You're my person now. That's not a relationship.
Or why have you avoided it? Or why does not having, like, how do we make everyday decisions that perpetuate our privilege? And they benefit us. Like, I think that when you said, I don't want you to solve my problems, I was like, after you or me or whoever, after we get out of denial, depression, anger, we want to move towards acceptance and change. We want to be like, no, there needs to be some kind of change, right? Like, and so after checking what benefit you've received, I think the next painful part is not just looking at the past and the way that I look at the way that I've benefited. The hardest and harder part for sure is my future decisions. Mm-hmm. Because then you're like, damn, I know now that I'm basically making decisions that perpetuate racism.
And right? It's hard to change. Like, oh, I don't want to, like, I think about when I finally like realized when I did my work and I realized, oh yeah, all the clothing stores I'm shopping at only have white models. And I was like, okay, if I want to move forward and like, I have to find stores that are inclusive. Like, that's hard. It's easier just to go with my old life and just shop where they already have my credit card information. But it's like, that's part of the work, right? So you have to, yeah, you have to move into that acceptance of like, the change ain't going to be easy. And I think, America, you hit on such an important part for being an ally. Like, it's not going to feel good all the time. It's going to be like tough. It's going to feel funky. You're going to be dealing with a lot of emotions. But that's part of the journey of how to be a good ally.
And you're not comfortable in all yeah. kinds of ways, because you can't just keep buying the stuff you buy. You can't look at the world the same way anymore. That was a big one that I really didn't understand. Like, you literally can't look at the world the same way, where like my husband is struggling with this. He literally can't go to the South and feel comfortable there anymore, because he's done some kind of work where he was now like, I am now so uncomfortable in this space. I can't even be in its presence or support it. And I'm like, what's the big deal? We're just gonna go and have some drinks, whatever. Let's go fly to Charleston, you know? You know? And I'm just like, whoa, wait.
Oof, I'm from the South. Wait. This conversation's hitting hard.
Right. Because
your husband and I need to talk.
Yeah, that feeling that you're having, I don't think I got, because I just wanted to be like in this denial space. Like, I'm comfortable. I can go to Charleston and just have fun. And he's like, I can't go to Charleston.
You're rearranging your whole world and the way you've seen it.
You're like, taking off those rose-tinted glasses, you mean?
And you're moving up a floor in the elevator, you know?
Yes. You know what you guys are talking about, though, and I say this because we've been talking about like white people. It is not just a white people thing. It is not. I know a huge portion of people think that it is. I get that, right? But Teresa and I, for example, had a conversation with Jennifer maybe a week ago, you know, around like being biracial. And Both Jennifer and I have fully kind of processed what it means to be an immigrant, all these things. And Teresa was like, what? I don't even know.
I'm in denial. It's my superpower skill.
But that's part of this, right? Because we are all doing this work to make sure that we are good allies.
Any final thoughts, Whitney?
Yeah, be an ally. Do the work. engage in this process and know that it's messy and it's not pretty, but allies are needed in every space where people are marginalized. I think we've named a lot of them. It goes beyond a month of awareness. You know, these are marginalized communities that have experienced shame, stigma, and judgment, and they need people who will walk alongside with them. And I think everyone willing to take up that work and do it and engage in that process and educate yourself and then take action.
Thanks all. These intellectual ones are real hard.
Thank you guys for listening.
See you next time. Keep fighting in the open.
Thanks, Whit.
Thanks, guys.